Beyond the Mic with Sean Dillon.
We're joined on the star line by a funky, fun singer-songwriter who's traveled the world. She sang at Coachella, also with Scary Pockets and Postmodern Jukebox. You've seen her in Scorn, Love Kills on ID Discovery. Her latest song is Bad Dreams. It's our friend, Therese Curatolo.
Hi, Sean.
I'm so glad to see my friends return.
So good to see you.
Therese, let's go beyond the mic.
Okay. Ding and I are here. We're ready for it.
You said, quote, "The music industry isn't moved by your potential. It's moved by your momentum." How has your momentum been since we last talked?
It was really good. It was so good. It was intoxicating. And if I can encapsulate that intoxication, I don't think anybody would ever take a drug for the rest of their lives.
Why?
Because I don't think you could match that level of euphoria, really, with any kind of substance. It energetically, molecularly, cellularly was so fulfilling. But as quickly as one goes up is as quickly as one can come down. And as quickly as the industry can change for the better is as quickly as the industry can change for the worse.
Your life and my life, it's like a thrill ride. We just can't get off.
It's a, you know, life is a highway. In my case, it's a roller coaster.
Ah.
An escape room. Haunted house. Why did I choose this room? Yes. So the momentum is great. I'm not going to say was because I'm not going to manifest that, but it is great. It was doing incredible. But like you said, the challenges that we've faced as an industry, as an artistic community, as an entertainment industry have posed some problems and some roadblocks. And we're still, I think as a whole, really still recovering from 2020 into 2021.
Music has been part of you and your dad and your brother. Mm-hmm. What's one story of your dad as a professional musician that either encouraged you or discouraged you?
Ooh. Let me get this out right. Okay. I think to see him work one job his whole life, little boy from Brooklyn, musical from his head to his toes, walking into an open call for Beatlemania on Broadway, nailing it, getting it, taking it. Once the show closes, he doesn't just sit there and go, well, what am I going to do now? On the West Coast, he then forms the group Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, which is the only the first tribute act of its kind and the only tribute act with licensing to use the music from Sony. I digress. I think from that point, having a career 40 plus years to the point where Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Brian Wilson, Eric Carmen, these big's the wrong word. These living legends know your name and want to work with you, want to have you make music with them. I think that is a true testament to not only the perseverance of a musician, but when your reputation precedes you, when your musical knowledge, when your grace, when your professionalism precedes you, it invites other professionals into your world and into the room, and they want to hear and see that growth. And those are not no names. Those are the men that he studied, you know, like classical people study Mozart and Beethoven.
So, the gravitas of his life.
I mean, his life. And they just like, oh, come on. If I ever had that where, you know, my heroes were hearing what I was doing and just, yeah, come on, come be a part of that. I'd shit my pants. So I think it's not really a one story. It's kind of just like an overview of my dad's whole story and the legends that he's invited in with his continuous professionalism and just artistic genius, really, because I don't know how he does what he does and how he's sustained what he has the last.
He just does it.
He does it. And they're asking him to be in his bands and record on albums. And I was like, what? It's wild.
What about the stories that discouraged you?
Stories that discouraged me are him having something that he built and having it taken from him, having to go through lawsuits, having copyright infringements, having people try to capitalize on a product, on a show, on something that he built, on a corporation that he built, and it being taken, stolen, and restamped. And that's his artistic intelligence. So he has always told me two things. It's all luck in this world. And that's something I try to push out of my brain, because when I'm feeling lucky, it's like, oh yeah, it's all luck in this world. But when I'm feeling unlucky, I'm like, God damn it, it's all luck in this world. So it's a double-edged sword, right? But then he's also told me, keep fighting the good fight. Just keep going. This won't beat me. Keep going. Keep going. And I think that his career is a testament of that.
You've written Hope, Love, Dis Daniel, and now Have Bad Dreams.
Yeah.
Why is your music different and better now?
Because I'm not the same person I was yesterday. And you can say that every day.
Yep.
You can truly say that every day. I'm not the person I was yesterday. I don't even know the person who talked to you last time. Like what, 2021? Look at that. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I feel like I had training wheels on. Right. And now I'm.
But you were so successful then.
Yes. But I can say I'm so successful now. And then I've talked to you in 3 years. And I'm like, what was I even talking about in 2025? So I think maturity and growth are so poignant. At least in my life right now, it's like every season provides something new for me and some kind of growth. And since I last spoke to you, like I said, the highs were really high and the lows were really low. And we're balancing. We're finding a common ground right now.
So what was that high?
The high was as soon as the floodgates opened, after the travel restrictions were lifted, after COVID, and we went full steam ahead. We were touring. I don't even think I saw my home for a month cumulative. I was just on the road, and that feeds me in a different way. Some artists don't like going on the road. I love it. It feeds me. Tinkerbell needs applause to survive, right? So I loved going back out there. I missed the human connection, especially through music. So that was an outrageous high. And I love traveling and I love sharing music with live audiences, as well as the momentum that my personal catalog started to gain. It was like the most perfect marriage. I was like, this is happening. I'm doing music. I'm singing music. I'm meeting people. This is outrageously cool. Yes. Thank you, universe. More please. And more please came, and then it went, I'm gonna need to stop. I'm gonna let you finish, but I'm gonna need to stop you right there.
How did Paul help you as a producer on Daniel and in general musically?
So Paul, being my little brother, he is an incredible aspiring producer. And what he always says to me is, Trace, you write the music, you bring it to me, and then I hear it differently. And thank God for that, because I suffer from something called demoitis, where, you know, I'll write something and it's... living where I live, I write pretty soft, and I just, you know, I thumb it out, I write it, and it doesn't have the, it doesn't have the chutzpah. When Paul listens to it, he goes, yeah, that's great. I think it should sound like this. So I'll say, I want to, it was kind of inspired like this, and then I give him some references, and he goes,
No.
And then he picks up the guitar, which he plays every instrument, knows he's a virtuoso, just like Dad. It's not something that I got, Sean.
Yeah.
I got the songwriting. They got the virtuosity of the music. And Paul's ear is so finely tuned, like Dad, that he can hear the retro inspiration instantaneously and go, that lends itself to this. This is where you got this, and this is how we're going to do this. And he builds on it, and he takes his time. That's something that he does. He takes his time. He doesn't rush a project. He layers it. He takes his time. He lets it really marinate in the sauce.
Therese Ghirardello joins us beyond the mic. You've been dreading this, but...
No.
It's time for the Rockin' 8. Random questions answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. Therese, there is no pressure.
The Rockin' 8!
Have you ever seen a shooting star, and has your wish come true yet?
Yes, I have, and I don't remember the wish, so I don't know.
If you had to get rid of the color teal or orange, your two favorites, forever, which one is skin in the heave-ho?
Probably orange.
Really?
I don't know why. Well, teal's in the blue family, and blue equals peace, and I need a lot of that. Orange, I love. It's bright and sunny, but then it reminds me of the sun, and the sun damages me a lot, so maybe we'll just get rid of orange.
Time for a trick question. The best Beatle is obviously...
That's mean. That's mean. I don't know. I don't know. Because I love them all. They are all equally my four uncles. I don't know. George.
I thought it would be Ringo. Your favorite color of makeup is?
Ooh. I'm really into this this burnt red moment. I don't know why.
The longest nap you've ever taken was how long?
I've come home from tours and skipped a day.
Love it. Best thing about your orthodontist, Dr. Tom?
Besides everything, Dr. Tom is everything to me. Everything.
What does your cat Ding do that makes you smile?
He's a lunatic. This little 7-month-old is a lunatic. But probably my favorite thing that he does is rile himself up into a frenzy and then plop himself down. And he does this thing where he'll just like, he'll open his legs up and he'll peek through his legs just to see if I'm looking, just to make sure I've still got eyes on him. And then he'll start to pant because he was raised by wolves.
Like its owner.
He's crazy.
Best thing you've found during your last thrifting expedition?
Oh, wait. I found a pair of vintage Fry boots that are like not like the trendy campus boot that everyone's wearing right now. Like these were the ones that clearly my dad was talking about. I used to wear some cowboy boots, Fry boots in the 70s. They are vintage, and I'm obsessed with them.
Therese Ghirardello joins us beyond the mic. I want to know the story of this photo.
Okay.
Now, see beyondthemic.com for the photo.
You would find that. So,
are you being a princess or Jasmine? I love that you pulled your brother's mask over his eyes so he couldn't see.
I mean, that was all Paul. He's helpless. You know, he's helpless.
So tell me the story.
That's how he wore his COVID mask, too. So I really can't. So this Halloween happened to be a Halloween where my grandparents were visiting from New York, and my grandmother was an incredible seamstress. So I said I wanted to be Princess Jasmine. I think this was the year of Aladdin, clearly. Uh-huh. And, no, I did not do my own makeup. I think grandma did that too. But instead, my grandmother was, I mean, she's a product of 1920. So she refused to let my mom go out and buy a store-bought costume because, you know, everyone was going to have that. So I told her what I wanted to be, and she would sit there every day and work on this costume. And she said, I'll make it for you. Picked out the fabric, the whole 9 yards. And I was so stoked. Looking back on it, get you a grandma that makes your costumes, but like makes them like exquisite with the sequins and the gem and the whole thing, like the chiffon, just. Yeah, so that was Princess Jasmine.
Well, Princess Jasmine, before you started touring as a musician, you were a brand specialist and a makeup artist.
I was.
So would you ever want your own line of makeup, and what would you call it?
Ooh. Meow Cosmetics. It's the cat's meow. Exactly. Cat winged eyeliner. We're talking feline, just everything pulled and tight and snatched. I think that would be fun. But as a fan of these different brands that have been created by different artists, Selena Gomez, Rihanna, I don't know that I would want to take that on. I think I just want to be known for the music and not, oh, Lady Gaga just came out with a line, which I absolutely do love. I just like wearing their makeup. I'd rather tout their makeup than write about it.
So you have an unhealthy love affair with glitter. Some people have said that you're either a musician or stripper with the amount of glitter you own.
Not wrong.
What makes the herpes of crafting so much fun for you?
The herpes of crafting? That's a line. That is a line I want to coin. Okay. I think what it is that it is the herpes of crafting. Truly, it's that you know you've been around me when you walk away with a little bit of glitter.
All it takes is a hug.
Oh my God. Or yeah, I just love it. I just think, you know, I had a, she's going to kill me. One of my dearest friends and choreographers in Reno, Lisa Dusich, she runs Reno Dance Company. She's unmatched. I've been performing with her company yearly since I was in college. And she would always say, no, I mean, you need more bling, Therese. You need more bling. You need more bling. Because she is a showgirl, was a showgirl. And I don't know why, and going back to grandma, and everything was sequined and everything sparkled. Just if you're going to be on stage, sparkle. And I never, you know, like to wear anything gaudy, you know, around my face, neck. No, I was never really into that. So I was just like, you know, if I'm going to be in a theater of thousands of seats, the one thing you're going to see are my eyes and my teeth. Those are the things you're going to see. So I figured out a way to merge that vaudevillian flapper makeup, but make it modern with all that sparkle, and making it gaudy kind of accidentally became a talking point and a look. And I mean, women say they hate it, but then they turn up wearing the exact same damn thing. So. Hate me louder.
Since you brought up Reno, you started your college musical training with Dr. Catherine DeBoer at Nevada before auditioning with the Metropolitan Opera twice. Mm-hmm. How has your love of music changed from Reno to today?
Well, being out of college in the beautiful cocoon that is university and in the real working world in the industry, I've had moments where I really cling to the classical training and the actual education that I was provided, because the industry side robs so much love and joy from the actual art, from music. And I understand now why we have admin, we have managers, we have agents, and why we have artists that just pour everything they've got into the craft, and they let admin take care of everything else. Because when you're doing both, it can rob a lot from your creative spirit. That being said, as an artist writing and releasing my own things, I think my love for the music has grown insurmountably. And everything that I write, every vowel that I form doesn't go without thoughts of the university and where I come from and how I trained and how this will provide some kind of longevity in my future.
Therese, how's the way you sing change from your opera days to today?
Well, funny enough, on TikTok, people keep going, when are you going to do Pat Benatar? And I love when they give me their dissertations in the comments. Like, you know, Pat Benatar went to school for
opera. Because they know better.
It's almost like they're on to something. And I say to them, that's funny. I learned about Pat Benatar being a classically trained singer when I was training classically. And it made me love her more, because I'd never allowed my voice to open up into that real, because I was like, oh my God, no, so precious. I could never do that. But when you learn what you're doing and you learn your body and you learn your technique and you're solid on it, you can't hurt yourself. I mean, you can hurt yourself with lack of sleep, overworking, straining, all those things. But when you're singing correctly and you're singing responsibly, you can sing anything. And I used to say this to people that would see me perform with pockets, and they'd be like, man, how do you shred every night? Like, how do you shred? And then you go up to these crazy whistles. Like, how do you do that? It's like a runner. It's like an Olympic athlete. They train, they know their body, they trust their body, they know what their body can do, they know what it's capable of, they know when to pull back, they know when they've got everything. And you test it and you grow with everything that you learn, with every note, with every risk or vocal run you take. You're like, oh shit, I didn't know I could, oh no, I'm gonna drill that. So I think it's gotten better, and it gets better every day when I do sing. When I don't sing, I don't feel guilty about it. I just go, rest, baby, rest, rest, rest.
Why have you allowed opening yourself up to risks?
Because I think that it's necessary to be the best. Absolutely. In college, I wanted to sing the hardest fucking arias, the hardest arias. And Catherine, Dr. DeBoer, was like, maybe not. And she would try to hand me something challenging, like, here, do a coloratura. And I would look at her and go, maybe not. That's not my voice. But learning coloratura brought me to the bigger arias. So it's a trade-off. And I think I've always been wired to challenge myself and learn the hardest thing first, and then almost backtrack. It's really counterproductive if you think about it, but that's how my brain works. Like, no. If I'm going to learn the guitar, God damn it, I want to learn Paul Simon first. And people are like, maybe you should learn Taylor Swift. You know, like, just back it up a little bit. But I want to run before I can crawl. And yes, it's been problematic, but it's also been very self-serving.
So what's your dream opera to sing?
Oh, La Boheme, hands down. I think it's one of the greatest works ever written.
Oh, beautiful.
Most emotional.
What about a Broadway show?
Wow, it's like you're in my brain. This morning, I'm going to let you guys in on a little dream state. I do have crazy dreams, right? Hence the next release, Bad Dreams. Mm-hmm. And when I wake up from them, I immediately walk myself through them and I dissect. Why did I go here? Why did I see this? What was this trying to tell? Like, just, you know, symbolism and woo-woo, different metaphysical stuff. Why did I go there in my subconscious mind? So this morning I woke up. And I'm telling you, Sean, this is real. This is tripping me out right now. The fact that I just spoke about my grandparents in that photo, right? This morning, I wake up from a dream where I was called in day of to put on the blue dress and play Glinda in Wicked. And they called me because they knew I knew the whole fucking show. Backwards, frontwards, that. They're like, hey, we need you to do it. No, the dress will fit. Just, yeah, okay. And I remember I'm putting the dress on in the aisle of the theater, and the house is packed. So it's not like I gave them any kind of surprise. I was just putting the dress on, zipping it, making sure, like, putting the wig on, tucking it. And I'm calling down the road to make sure that my family's seated in their little, you know, promo aisle. Everyone's good. And I saw my grandparents were there that I haven't seen in years. Parents, everyone's there. Okay, and then I run around the back, and I'm getting it all, and I'm going, God damn it, where's the script? I know all the music, but I just want to make sure that my cues are right. Can I have a script? Couldn't find a script, so I was winging it. But that was that was the dream that I woke up from this morning, and I went, wow, the universe is a really big bully right now, because why did I need to go there? I haven't thought about Broadway or that show in some time, but man, I woke up and I was like, damn, I would have killed that too. I'm ready. I would have done it. So Telsey, give me a call. I'm ready to go in, coach.
Therese Caratello joins us beyond the mic. It's like a roller. Click, 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 click.
And drop.
Now the drop. So what was that low? We talked about the highs. What was that low? And how did you overcome that adversity?
The low was knowing the last time I was going to go on tour with a group that I poured a lot of my heart and soul into. And I just knew it. I knew it. it didn't resonate with my spirit anymore. And it really does sting like an end of a relationship, really, you know. That's the only thing I can attribute it to. It was bittersweet because I knew, but to every bittersweet, there's a lot of bitter, and you have to like load the sugar on to mask it. So it took me really low because I walked away from it like, you had to do that. You had to do it. It was necessary. It was necessary for you.
How did leaving allow you the growth you needed?
It puts you in a place of what now? What now? What now? What now? But I did it with a lot of faith. A lot of faith in me and behind me. You know, my commercial coach, Killian, his slogan is leap and the net will appear. So that's what I did. This isn't serving me anymore. And I have more, you know, self-control and self-worth than this. So I need to jump the ship and focus on me. But it, after years and years and years of it, and so much fun and so many happy memories, it brings you down low. And then it's almost like things snowball, things stack up. You leave one thing and then you got to leave your apartment. Then you got no work. Then you got this. Then you go through a breakup. And it's everything hits you at one time. It's a freight train, but there's like the 405 traffic right behind it and everything's just piling up. So it took me down really, really low. It didn't get me down, in the words of Raging Bull. It never got me down, but it brought me to a low point after having flown so high for years. So I'm, I've learned to rest, not give up. Rest, not give up. Just kind of listen to the meter inside and just rest. Not everything needs your attention right in that moment. It took the mirror that I had on them and it just turned it right toward me. So I had to sit and stare at it for a long time and go, that's who you work for right there. That you work for you. You make music for you. It comes from you. You need to love you now. You need to pour into you.
Which musician would you love as a mentor?
That's really hard, Sean.
That's why I ask you, Therese.
I would say the one that just left us 2 weeks ago, Brian Wilson. That's who I would want. Uncle Brian.
So why was the late, great Brian Wilson able to touch your heart and change your life?
He was asked to water his talent down, to water himself down, to put on a striped shirt and pop out surf hits, because that's what Capitol Records wanted. That's what his dad wanted. But I don't know how, in what universe, you can pop out, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, everybody's surfing. Everyone's great. But you're able to put out a song like Surfer Girl that covers all the bases, but it's so musically intricate and it's so harmoniously rich. And what's the word I'm looking for? Complex. That you have people to this day dissecting what he did and those harmonies. Simple. Surf, pop tune, pop ballad, whatever you want to call it. And don't get me started on the greatest song ever written, God Only Knows. And I say that as a huge Macca head. McCartney knows no wrong, right, in my eyes. But I think that Brian Wilson really did truly write the greatest song of all time. And he didn't even sing it. That's his brother.
So what's the power as a songwriter of giving away a song?
I don't know. I think about that a lot. I think, well, if I wrote this, I just write this, and then because every song that comes from my intelligence, it's still a piece of me. So I don't know how easy it would be to like grow something, nurture something, and then just give it up for adoption. But I feel like at that point with Brian, he wrote the song and he knew that he was merely a portal for the song to enter and exit. And I don't know the deets, but who knows if he was too weak within himself to sing it, you know, if it was too powerful for him, if it was too overpowering for him and he had to have his brother Carl sing it. Maybe that was the whole point. That's why he wrote it, because God only knows where I'd be without my brothers. I don't know. There's so much, but it's amazing.
So who would you love to mentor?
When I see or hear or know of someone, I will let you know. Right now, I don't know. The pool is looking weird.
Now, your fans are called Bing Bongs. What are your enemies called?
I can't say that. My enemies turn into songs.
I always said you were an old soul. What era of music would you have fit into best?
Doris Day, Connie Francis, Julie Andrews, hands down. As much as I love the 70s, oh, and the 60s, I feel like the 50s really, Ella Fitzgerald, Doris Day, all of that, those old Disney princesses, that real transatlantic music is just my favorite.
What's the last guitar you bought, and have you been put on the band list at Fanny's yet?
Fanny's, you know I want that Minnie Martin, baby, that 1925. Save her for me. Fanny's. Oh, that guitar that I walked away from last year haunts me to this day. And I'm like, why didn't you just take out a loan and walk home with that? The last guitar I purchased was the 00-28 Martin. I think I purchased that in 21. Yeah, 2021. And the first song I wrote on it was Bad Dreams. So I branded it immediately. I went, yep. You singing to me. Yeah.
How has the music scene changed from when you began?
This.
Yep, that phone.
That. The fact that people aren't watching so much anymore. They're recording it. The fact that artists don't get paid shit for their music, whether you're buying it on iTunes, streaming it for 0.00000017%. YouTube, Amazon, whatever. We're paying to play unless you're umbrellaed under a major label, which is very, very sad and disheartening. But again, I go back to, that's why we cling to live music. We cling to tours. We want to go out. We want to play, because there's funding in that. There's not only do you reach a broader audience when you put yourself literally in the lion's den, but it pays, it subsidizes everything that we do behind the scenes, everything that we're paying for, to give you this Instagram post of 35 seconds with a pretty canvas and please pre-save this link, all that, all the hoops we have to jump through for these streaming platforms and how much money we give to the conglomerate for just a chance, for just a listen, for a share, for a like, for a while. It's changed so much. When I was performing, even back in 2012, what a different world. I mean, we were still walking around with our iPods.
So Reese, my friend, why do you keep doing it?
Like, I love a challenge and I like to do the hardest stuff first and then backtrack. It really is a rat race within me. And I know my therapist would be like, what did I tell you? Nobody's on a race. There's more than enough for everybody, blah, blah, blah. It's a race within myself. It fuels me. It keeps me going. Because if I didn't do it, number one, I'd be bored. But it's almost like in a weird way, and don't take this the wrong way, but I want to prove it to myself. Because I've already proven to myself 20 times over how capable I am talent-wise and what I can achieve. But I want to achieve things that really some days seem unattainable. But I keep doing it because, God damn it, like Dad says, it's not going to beat me. This is not going to beat me.
It's almost impossible achieving a podcast hit. How much harder is it for a musician to break through today?
I feel like a drop in the ocean. A drop in the, until I hit the stage and do it live, then I feel like the ocean. When I'm doing it behind the scenes, yeah. Ah, yeah, let that shit marinate, Sean. I feel like a drop in the ocean when I'm over here posting and self-promoting. I hate it. It makes me cringe. It makes my skin crawl. It's like cayenne pepper in a cut. But I know what it feels like to be the ocean on that stage and to splash everybody with the goodness of live music and with my music. So knowing what that feels like, it's really hard to come back and go, well, yeah, no, I'm just not going to do that. Like I got to throw in the towel. I can't do it. Because once you've tasted it, you've got to do it. You've got to do it more.
Our friend Therese Curatolo joins us beyond the mic. What are you obsessed with now?
Dried mango. I don't know. I mean, my cat has really got me laser beam focused. I adopted him last November, and he's taken up a lot of my world at the moment, and I love him. Needed him, really needed him.
Why?
Because I was lonely. I'm going to be honest with you. I was so lonely. And I remember last summer being so sad and crying so much and just being afraid of what was going to happen in the world. That was a encroaching, like, oh my God, you know, we were getting closer to November. And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And I was in braces. I was in braces last summer. That'll do something to you. But in the best way, I went home because I had to vote in Nevada, went home, got my braces off, and my dad pulls up this little post that goes, oh, look, free kittens. And I was like, send me that post right now. He goes, you're out of your mind. You can't have a cat. And I said, yes, I can. I got no boyfriend. I got no kids. I can have a cat. And he goes, you tour. You're a traveling musician. You can have a cat. I'm going to train him to be a tour bus cat. I can have a cat. He's learning the potty right now. He's learning how to use the potty right now, folks. You can train a cat. Yes, you can. So, yeah, he gave me something to focus on other than numbers, stats, release dates, going and chasing work and likes and comments. And it's a beautiful thing. Very, very beautiful thing.
Why is it easier yet harder the more people see you for you to get to where you want to be musically?
Well, I used to fantasize about doing these digital detoxes where I'd be like, I'm going to put this out and then I'm just going to go escape to the Alps for a month, 2 months, just go off the grid, shut my... That is not an option in my sweet little indie world at the moment, because like I said, doesn't care about your talent. It cares about your momentum. Momentum. We're in the game now. We got skin in the game and we got to keep going. I've given up the philosophy that people are going to burn out on me. They're going to be so sick of seeing my face. They're going to be so sick of this. So sick of me promoting a new song. The people that want to see you win, want to see you win. The people that like what you're doing, look forward to it. So I always had this like crippling, not imposter syndrome, because I know who I am and where I'm. But this feeling like, oh God, people are going to, oh God, they're just going to get so sick of me. And I'm sick of me. I'm bumming myself out. But you got to show up every day like it's the first day. Going back to like, you've already tasted that and you got to quench your thirst for it. You got to keep going. Otherwise, I mean, no one's going to come in and do it for you.
Why does writing heartbreak folk soothe the pains in your own heart?
Because it's a diary set to music. It doesn't require a lot of forethought. And if you've listened to it, some people might argue it didn't require it. I mean, there was no forethought. It just kind of comes out. And it's therapeutic because once it's out and once I hear it back and I hear it musically, it doesn't sting as much. And it's almost like the scab is forming and we can move on. Okay. Great. On to the next heartbreak, folks. What's it going to be this year? I don't know.
Speaking of scabs, have you let the heartache of Daniel finally go? Or are you still hanging on to it?
Daniel wasn't really a heartache at all. Bad dreams is a heartache. I'm not going to lie to you. But Daniel was accidental. Daniel was funny because I was fucking frustrated. I was frustrated beyond. And I just wrote these words down that really could pin somebody to a wall. And I didn't think much of it. I wrote it. And then I demoed it again, gave it to Paul. And Paul's like, now hear me out. Hear me out. He goes, you're writing it like an Americana. Yeah. A jingy jang jam. But the lyrics are so cutting. They slice. So it really should come off campy and happy, like tongue in cheek. And the contrast there is hilarious. And I said, yeah, no, that, yes, producer, yes, 100%. So there was frustration with that one. But the more we worked on it, the more laughable the whole situation became. And that was the healing process with that. It was like, oh, God.
Due to mature subject matter, parental discretion is advised.
So funny, right? So funny. But man, those are some good words.
Going on the road is tough as a musician. Your challenge from being away from home also tests your strength, staying sober and smiling in times that some people would say are really tough. How has going on the road changed and challenged you in the last 5 years?
When you go on the road, you have to really maintain your discipline in any area. If you're challenged with sobriety, diet, sleep, partying, whatever, and I'm not, but the discipline for me is trying to stay as slippery as an eel in the sense that other personalities, other projections, other characters don't stick to me, almost like I have to spray repellent on before I go on the road. Because as a self-proclaimed empath, which I really am, I absorb, I don't observe, I absorb. And touring copiously. And I think it was finally my third like big European tour I went. And I just separated myself, not in a holier than thou way, but just, I don't need to be involved in everything. And you start to shield yourself, and that's discipline. Because life of the party, I want to jump in. I want to be involved in the foam party. I want to go, but it takes discipline and boundaries to just shelter yourself when there are so many active personalities and energies running rampant on the road.
Beyond the mic makes you think, laugh, and go, damn it, Sean. So why'd you want to come back?
Heather Humans, she introduced us, right? Yep. Yeah. Divine intervention. And meeting her was divine intervention as well. She's such a beautiful soul. I think like going back to when we last spoke, I mentioned that I felt like I had training wheels on because I'd never pitched my music. I'd never sent EPKs out in PR. This was a whole new world for me. So this being one of my first, I want to say first four podcast interviews, or, you know, musical interviews in general, it was poignant to me because you were so warm, educated, thoughtful in your discovery and your questions. And I felt instantaneously connected to you as a human, just beyond the mic, right? Just, and your beautiful wife. And you guys were just so warm and encouraging that I felt like, oh my gosh, this man actually like sees me and cares about what I'm doing. Not just, you know, the people that drill questions and splice and dice, and, you know, it's a flash in the pan. So this one was really special to me, and it stayed with me. So here I am, blessed to be back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Who's the one person you want to sing with or for?
I would love to sing for and with Harry Styles.
Harry, call her now.
I saw him in Amsterdam in 23, friends playing with him, and I was enamored, absolutely enamored. I was like, that, I got to write with that guy. I got to sing with that guy. So anytime, Harry.
You've had strange problems with men. What's the strangest skeleton you have found in a guy's closet?
Wow. That's hard to pinpoint. And that's not me pussyfooting around the question. I get your question, but they're not skeletons so much as they might be wounds, whatever, but I always tell my mom when I get frustrated after going through another, whatever they call it, situationship. I said, Mom, I feel like a dress in the window of Bergdorf Goodman, right? A dress, just. And everyone, all the passersby, they stop and they ogle at it. They want it. They lust after it. But no one has the balls to go inside and ask how much it is.
Wow.
Ask to try it on. But they'll pass the window and they'll ogle at it. They'll take pictures of it. And yeah. So I don't know. I guess that seems to be a running theme, and I will die on this hill. I wish I wrote Sabrina Carpenter's latest song, Man Child. Damn. Missed the train on that one. And I would have sold it to her. I would have given it to her. I don't need to sing it, but man, I wish I wrote it. It's so perfect. Perfect.
What makes a good song?
I think a good song is something that can be stripped down to even singing it a cappella. And you can hear everything swirling around you. It doesn't come down to the production. It comes down to the melody, what the song is at its core.
When songwriting, what opens up your creative side?
What I'm saying has a lot to do with how I form a melody. I know what intervals make me chilly, make my hair raise. And when I'm sad, the first thing I'll do is I'll go to classical music. And the modes in classical changes, whether we know it or not, as musicians and as listeners, those familiar melodies are so ingrained in us. It's almost like they're in our DNA that me speaking personally, I have absolutely no conscious thought as to regurgitating them. They just kind of come out. And I just know, I know what it's going to take to pull me when I write a line and I have to sit, oh my God, then I know that other people are going to share in that effect.
So, Therese, what's next for you musically?
The music that's coming out for the rest of the year, I've been sitting on like Mother Goose. I don't know why. I think it didn't feel like the right time last year to release music amid all the chaos. Not saying that this year is any better, but what I can say is the time for the music is now. It's now. And the music is great. The music is coming from different collaborations with different producers and musicians. And it's leveling up. It's just a different era. And I don't really like the word era because Taylor Swift coined it. I don't like it. But it's a new era.
Time for the uncomfortable question with Therese Curatolo being on the mic. You've modeled, acted, sang, lived, lost, mm-hmm. loved. What makes you happy now?
Loaded baked potato of a question. I guess what makes me happy now is knowing that some of the happiest days and best moments of my life on this planet haven't even happened yet. And I know that's weird because like, how can something in the future make you happy now? Because it's just hope. It's excitement for what's coming. And if I, looking back on the last 5 years, if I, this little independent artist that can sustain and live through that with the grace that I think I did, then what else? Like, let's keep going. We're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. It's the hope and the excitement for the future and for the real happiest days that bring me happiness now. Because you just assume it's now. Make you happy now.
You bring up your mom, so it's time for one big question with Therese Curatolo be on the mic.
They're all big questions, Sean. They're all big questions. You're making me over here sweat. I need to take the sweatshirt off now.
Therese, what's the one lesson that your mom, the best lesson your mom's ever given you?
Is to be happy now. Be happy now. Because you'll get older and you'll look back and go, what the fuck was I doing wasting my life being sad? I was wasting so much time being sad. She just screamed this out. And I say scream because in text, they were all caps. So that is screaming. She screamed this to me over the weekend. She's like, stop wasting fucking time being sad. You're going to waste so much time being sad. Be happy now.
You and me, we're empaths. The best Beatle, obviously George, misses the genius of Brian Wilson and wants you to hear her latest song, Bad Dreams. Our friend, Therese Curatolo, thanks for returning with us today.
That was awesome. Wow, what a cool wrap up.
And that, my friends, is a Beyond the Mic XL. If you're enjoying these conversations, please check out another Beyond the Mic episode to find more actors, artists, and people you need to know. We'd also appreciate a like and subscribe on the Good Pods app.